paradise and put up a fucking lie.
Welcome to At the Table. I'm Clark Wolf, and this is the weekly radio show about all things food, brought to you from Sonoma County. Not just wine country, but farm country. And right now, good, fresh, safe salad country. If you go to the farmer's market in our area right now, this week, last week, next week, you will see a lot of smiling farmers who have a lot of lettuce piled up on their tables that is selling like crazy. Americans, and certainly Northern California, and certainly Californians in general, truly do love the greens that come out of the garden. And there's been a lot of talk about greens that can make us sick. Today, our guest is Dr. Marion Nessel. She's been on this show many times before. She's in New York City. She's written some of the most important books about food and nutrition. The most recent, What to Eat Now. It's an indispensable guide to good food, how to find it, and why it matters. And soon to be published, Sugar Coated. We'll talk more about both of those things, but welcome, Dr. Nessel.
Oh, happy to be here, as always.
As always. All right. And I'm going to dispense with the doctor and go back to the Marion. And Marion, give us the overview of this. Just remind us the big picture of this lettuce debacle that has been going on and apparently continues to be rippling out into our community.
Well, it's the most extraordinary thing, partly because the numbers of cases keep rising, and the last number I saw was 18,000.
Wow.
And we're not, and that's only the ones that have been reported.
Yeah.
Some estimates say that you're supposed to multiply that number by 80 in order to get the actual number of people who are sick from this. This is a diarrheal disease that's not your ordinary run-of-the-mill, oh, I've got to go to the bathroom a few times. This is what is referred to charmingly as explosive diarrhea, which means it's almost uncontrollable. You can't be anywhere not close to a bathroom. It's really, really awful, and it lasts a long time, maybe as much as 2 weeks. And there are people who've been hospitalized as a result. I mean, this is really, really bad. And the horrible part about it, besides how bad it is for individuals, is that it comes from human waste.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one place where this particular organism grows, and that's in the human digestive tract. So what this means is that wherever it is you got it from, that thing that you ate had been exposed to human sewage.
So very specifically, the name, this is a parasite, and we believe that it originated in open fields in central Mexico via iceberg lettuce that has been shipped all over the country and who knows where else. Is that still correct? Do we still believe that's the case?
We think that may not be the only source. We don't really know. There have been cases, a pretty large number of cases, several thousand, that have been traced back to a particular farm in Mexico that happens to be 800 feet away from a public swimming facility. And who knows where the sewage from that facility goes. But nobody has been able to put all that together, in part because this particular parasitic organism takes a couple of weeks before it does. What happens is it lays eggs. They're called oocytes. They're really, really, really microscopic. You can't see them. They're very sticky. They stick to food. You eat the food. And then those oocytes have to germinate. They have to germinate and they have to grow up into enough of a population to make you sick. That takes a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And so one of the reasons that this is so hard to trace is because who can remember what they ate 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody can. But there have been some very careful investigations, particularly in New Hampshire, where they traced a number of cases back to a Taco Bell. And that Taco Bell got its lettuce from a Taylor Farms place in Mexico. And they, some of it is traceable, a lot of it is not. And it's not clear if that's the only source.
One of the things that has been said by a number of different people is that sometimes reused water, salvaged water, gray water, is gathered. And in many cases, it's used for farming. And if it's properly processed, then it's perfectly fine. Because, I mean, all water in our entire planet is recycled constantly, you know, and it doesn't all hurt us. But how does it happen that this reclaimed water can get this fecal matter into our food?
Well, if there's sewage leaking into the water is treated. Let's assume it's treated. The treatment doesn't get rid of the oocytes unless it's filtered to do that specifically.
Right.
They're really hard to get rid of. These things are really, really, really small. And they're not killed by chlorine, so the usual chlorination procedures don't get rid of them. And the filtration that used water usually goes through may not be adequate to get rid of oocytes. That's what the problem is.
Got it.
So if you're reusing sewage water, or if there's anything that's like sewage water around, you don't want to be growing vegetables anywhere near it because they're not cooked.
Yeah. And, you know, let's talk about this. By the way, if you've just joined us, we're talking to Dr. Marion Nestle. She's a molecular biologist. So when she says something small, it's to be taken seriously. And so how can we avoid getting this besides trying to assume that Taylor Farms, who produces salad mixes and blends and cuts and bags that are in so many brands from the highest to the lowest level of merchandising, and by that I mean money, cost, price. How do we avoid this and be careful?
Well, I think that's a really good time not to buy bagged salads.
Yeah.
This is a really good time to be buying greens from your local farmer's market. I mean, for one thing, it's summer, and this is a good time to do it.
Yeah.
And for another, whole heads of lettuce that if you remove the outer leaves and do the cutting yourself, the probability of this being contaminated with is less. If you buy from local farmers markets and they're not using sewage water for irrigation, then the chances are you're not going to get this. It's much, much safer. But this is bagged salads have been a problem for a long time.
Yeah.
And lots and lots of things happen in them. And certainly Bill Marler, who's the food safety lawyer who represents lots and lots of people who suffered from food poisoning, has a list of things that he won't eat, and bagged salads is very high on his list.
Yeah, I mean, particularly here in Sonoma County, we don't have that problem in the sense that there's no reason to buy bagged salads. And the triple washing, as it says on the label sometimes, doesn't really help, as you say, because these are so small, and if it's not filtered for it, it doesn't do it. And this is on lettuce, on salads, but if it gets to other vegetables, you mentioned very briefly, cooking does take care of it. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I did a blog post on this week and put in a recipe for cooked lettuce. I thought that was a really good thing to do. I got it out of the New York. I just put a link to the New York Times recipe for cooked lettuce. I thought, oh, this is a good time to be cooking lettuce.
This is a great time to be cooking lettuce. And, you know, grilled lettuce was a big, grilled romaine was a very big popular thing for a few years, a number of years ago.
Maybe now
bring it back and cover it with a hot sauce of some kind, right?
Yeah, bring it back.
So there's another part of this. We only have about 2.5 minutes in this segment. We'll continue with this conversation, but there's another part of it which has to do with the cutting back of oversight of these kinds of situations. Tell us about that.
Oh, it's hard to know where to begin.
Mm.
You know, the Food and Drug Administration is responsible for oversight of lettuce and greens. They have rules for producing leafy greens that have been in place for a very long time now, but they don't have anywhere near the kind of personnel that can oversee this and enforce it. And the Taylor Farms, which is the particular producer that's been caught up in this, in 2013, that's 13 years ago, was found to have be producing greens that were contaminated with cyclospora, and the FDA was very concerned about it and told them that they needed to clean up their act, but nobody's made them do that. And producers don't want to do what they have to do to prevent these things from happening, because it's really expensive to produce food safely, and they would just rather take their chances. Also, because it's very, very hard to pin responsibility on a producer in this particular case, the FDA has not found, or the CDC, completely decimated agencies, because they lost 20 to 30% of the personnel in the DOGE era. They haven't been able to find cyclospora in any lettuce coming from that farm. Well, no, of course not. It's already been eaten or thrown away.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, when we come back, we're gonna take a break here, and we're gonna come right back. When we come back with Dr. Mary Nestle, we're gonna talk about what to eat now and some of the things in that book she may feel help direct us towards avoiding these kinds of situations. When you have a situation like this, we don't know if there's gonna be lawsuits, if they can actually track it back to the producer, to the farm company that washes huge amounts in water that may not be as clean as it needs to be, or if they're going to sue us for defamation or some. I think I'll go not buy some salad right this moment. I'll be right back. We'll be right back with Dr. Mary Nestle at the table. Back at the table, I'm here with Dr. Mary Nestle. She is an American molecular biologist, a nutritionist, and a public health advocate, an extremely knowledgeable, articulate, and active person who has written a number of books that are just crucial to our understanding of how our food works and what we want to pay attention to. Her latest book, which is an updated version of her previous book, What to Eat, is now called What to Eat Now. And Marion, you went into this thinking you'd update it a little bit here and there and then rewrote the whole book, right?
Yeah, I've never underestimated a project the way I underestimated this one. I told the publisher that I thought I could do this in 6 months, and 4 years later, the book came out, and it's 700 pages.
Oh, my gosh.
It's so big. Although I'm told it's a very easy read, and I hope it is. But yeah, I mean, I just redid the project.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was a very entertaining project, so it wasn't terrible to do it. But I couldn't believe how much had changed in 20 years. That was the big surprise to me.
Well, talk about that. And I want to remind people, when you wrote the first book, part of the impetus was an experience you had buying romaine lettuce, where you bought six or seven different offerings, let's put it that way, of romaine, and they were all different prices. And so the issue there was crazy. And how has that changed?
Well, there's still some of that, although I was unable to repeat that particular experiment because there just weren't that many kinds anymore. But everything about supermarkets is designed to sell products. What a surprise.
Yeah.
That's what they're designed to do, is to sell you as much food as you can possibly buy at whatever price they can get away with. And oh my goodness, what's happening to prices is astonishing. And the entire store is set up to get people to come in there, spend as much time as possible in the store, because the longer you're there, the more you buy, and to see as many products as possible, because the more products you see, the more you buy. And companies pay supermarkets to place products where they're likely to be seen, so that you'll buy them. The whole thing is rigged.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you go into a supermarket and you find yourself buying tons of stuff more than you planned on buying, there's a reason for that. And it's interesting. Supermarkets are having a hard time now because of the price, because of the political stuff around ultra-processed foods,
yeah,
because of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. complaining about the food supply, and oh, for heaven's sakes, because of GLP-1 drugs,
yeah,
where people are buying less food.
Well, all right. So give us the thumbnail on the food industry. You said a couple of things that are very important. Lots of things. But the idea that there's all this food and there's all this manipulated merchandising and marketing. And as a person who sets up small marketplaces a lot of times myself, I know that there is something to that. There was a time when Coca-Cola was number one. And now you've said in various contexts that it's all these enhanced waters or purposeful, useful drinks. I mean, what is really being pushed right now?
Well, that was one of the big changes. Coke and Pepsi used to take up entire aisles of enormous supermarkets, and now they're relegated to much smaller sections with bottled waters of one kind or another filling in the gap. Bottled water is one of the most brilliant marketed products ever done because, I mean, there's hardly anything in them. They're just water. Water's really cheap. You could charge as much for them as you could charge for a lot of other products. The profit margin is very, very high on bottled drinks. That's why there are so many of them.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody wants to go into bottled drinks.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy because, I mean, I remember the story about Perrier and how Perrier was originally started by a glass company who was trying to figure out what to do with all this darn glass. And they thought, oh, we'll just put some local water in it and put some bubbles in it and call it fabulous. And
brilliant.
It is brilliant on a certain level, but maybe evil brilliant. I don't know. So,
well, you know, one of the things I did, I shop a lot at the Wegmans in Ithaca when I'm upstate New York, and that Wegmans sells a gallon of tap water, filtered tap water, for 67 cents. And I compare that to the $5, $10, $20, $50 per gallon waters that you can buy.
Yeah.
Fancy bottles or have fancy labels on them or health claims one kind or another. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
So what else? I mean, obviously, we don't want to hone this down, but what are some other top things that have really changed in the last number of years since you wrote the first book?
Well, the whole plant-based is new. The concern about buying foods online has totally changed the grocery business.
Yeah.
I saw that again in the Ithaca Wegmans, where the entire store was reorganized over one weekend. And I was horrified. I couldn't find anything in the store. Everything. Why? Because they had to make Easter's bags being stored. And the aisles are packed with people who are doing shopping for online shoppers.
Yeah, I read this morning that DoorDash is working on drone delivery, as are a number of different companies. So all I can think of is bad Jetsons, and they're going to be dropping bad sandwiches. And then when you want to call to say, where's my order? You talk to a drone and an AI and they send you to France, and then it all burns. I mean, it's, you know, if it weren't so terrible, it would be laughable, and it's laughable and it's still terrible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure. I can just see it dropping it down where I am now. That's amazing.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Ithaca now.
Oh, I see. Got it. So, yes, it's a little safer there than when you're in Manhattan, where if they try to drop it on your terrace where you grow a lot of things that you eat and enjoy, it might hit another building or a student at NYU.
It might. They'd have to be very careful. I'm not sure. I'm not sure drones are allowed in Manhattan. One hopes not.
Well, let's go back really briefly again in this last couple of minutes in this segment to talk about the oversight. We mentioned that Doge cut all this kind of stuff randomly, and it's been acknowledged by many different forces that they even know that they overdid it and all the rest of it. But I mean, this particular outbreak of this particular parasite was on a list of more things to watch that went from something like six different things that they're supposed to watch very carefully to two different things. Talk about how that worked.
Well, that's one of the things that happened. One of the main things is that there was to be a traceability rule involved in the produce industry, where any produce that was produced had to be labeled where it came from, so that you could trace, if there was a problem, you could trace back to where the problem originated. And the Taylor Farms, which is known to have given $1 or $2 million to Republicans, and where the CEO of Taylor Farms apparently had a meeting with Trump during this period, was one of the groups that argued very forcefully to delay the traceability rule. So that rule doesn't go into effect until the summer of 2028.
Yeah. You know, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. I do want to talk about your latest book that's coming out soon with Lisa Sutherland, called Sugar Coated, which, by the way, at this point, we almost want all of this salad and this other mess to be. We'll be right back here at the table. Back at the table, I'm Clark Wolf. I'm here with Dr. Mary Nessel. We're talking about a lot of things that have to do with having our food be wholesome and healthy and safe, and how challenging that is. And Marin, you have a new book coming out this fall called Sugar Coated. It makes me think of some other people's memoirs, but not yours. because I remember what you said when your memoir came out recently, that it was your first attempt at fiction because it was as you remembered things, which I thought, from a scientist, that was just brilliant. But tell us about this book. What was the impetus, and what's the partnership about? What's the book about?
Yeah, I've collected cereal boxes for years, and very specific ones with ridiculous health claims, mainly. And I started doing that about 20 years ago. By this time, I have a couple of hundred cereal boxes, each more ridiculous than the next. And the story goes back about 10 or 15 years to, I have a co-author on this book, which is unusual for me, but oh boy, was this a great experience. And she's a former vice president for nutrition for Kellogg.
Whoa.
Lisa Sutherland. She's currently the president of Jacksonville University in Florida. But she has a business background. And when she was working for Kellogg, I went out to Battle Creek, and she arranged for me to go out there. And I wanted to look at their files. They had agreed to let me look at their files. But when I got there, the lawyers wouldn't let me go anywhere near the files. And instead, they gave me color facsimiles of three sets of cereal boxes from the year they were introduced until 2010, when this was. So I have all this documentary material of what cereal boxes looked like. And even then, in 2010, we talked about that there was a book in this, because they could leaf through it and say, oh, this is when the FDA passed this rule.
Yeah.
And this is when we got sued by General Mills. And this is when Center for Science and the Public Interest came after us. Hmm. And this is when this happened and that happened. And when What to Eat Now was being reviewed by the editor, I had a long period of several months when I didn't have anything to work on, and my literary agent said, well, start working on your next book. And I thought, well, if I'm going to write a book about cereals, maybe I should check with Lisa. She had talked about doing it with me. This was 15 years ago. I haven't heard from her in 15 years. But I was able to track her down, and I wrote her and told her that I was thinking about doing this book. And she wrote right back and said, I'm doing it with you. And we did, and we had the best time, the absolute best time. She knew all this stuff that I didn't know about the lawsuits and the fights with the FDA and all of that kind of thing. That's one of the big themes in the book, is that the cereal industry pushed the envelope on regulation in every way it could. And, you know, these are breakfast cereals, so one of our big questions was, when did it become okay to feed kids this stuff for breakfast?
Yeah.
When did that happen and why? So we tell that story, and we talk about how the cereal industry uses nutrients, health claims, and targeted marketing to sell cereals. That's really what it's about.
It was originally a health food, or it was originally pitched as health food, wasn't it?
Oh, big time. John Harvey Kellogg, way back in the late 1800s and early 1900s, ran a sanatorium where whole wheat was one of the major foods. And he believed that whole wheat would take care of digestion. He wasn't wrong about that.
Yeah.
But that digestion was the cause of all of the diseases of that plagued humanity, and that if you fixed that by eating this kind of food, you would not only take care of your diseases, but you would stop obsessive sexual thoughts.
Oh, and dear.
It would stop you from masturbating.
Oh, you know, that's what I've always said about tricks.
You know, you can't make this stuff up.
No.
He was way ahead of his time in some ways.
Yes.
He thought whole grains and fiber were really important, and that sugar was really bad for you. I mean, in many ways, RFK Jr. sounds just like John Harvey Kellogg.
Well, there's a desire. Is it just in America? There's just seems to be a desire to find a silver bullet, a simple answer to the complexity that is human life. I mean, the idea that one approach, even though, as you say, having whole grains apparently is quite good for you, especially if they're not GMO and if they're not sprayed with all kinds of chemicals and if they're not added, right, added to sugary foods. But the notion of this oversimplicity, as you say, seems to be back in vogue, yes?
I think it's never gone out of style. It's just big time now because it's amplified by social media in a way that we never had to deal with before. So you can't take social media out of the equation. So we don't go into the history of cereals very much, in part because there are truly, truly excellent books.
Yeah.
That tell that history. And there's a particularly good biography of the Kelloggs. I mean, really outstanding book. And so mostly we're talking about marketing.
Yeah.
What's on the shelf, how it got there, what it means. We do a very serious deconstruction of the cereal box. We take every single element on the box and talk about why it's there and what it's there to do. And one of the reasons for using cereals as a example of talking about these kinds of issues is that they have a lot of box space.
Yeah.
They're big,
and they're like billboards on an aisle. I remember seeing this stack of Cheerios with a huge printed word that stood out more than the word Cheerios that said protein.
Protein, my current favorite cereal, as an example to talk about, is Raisin Cream Cheerios protein.
Yeah, you know, it's like Ben and Jerry's made
Oreo cookies on them.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. We're also going to talk about, apparently you're a person of a certain age not to be trifled with. Apparently, sometimes I remember many years ago they said you were on the top along with Gaddafi and all kinds of other terrorists. It's hard to be an advocate for food. We'll be right back here at the table. And we are back at the table. I'm Clark Wolf here with Dr. Marian Nestle. Marian, before we go any further, let's first make sure we know how to find you. You have a couple of places where we can follow you on a regular basis. Tell us about that.
Well, the main one is foodpolitics.com, which is my website where I write a 5 times a week daily blog. And that's my life is an open book on that site.
And I have to say, your level of other links to other information is just profoundly wonderful and useful. It's such a great resource. I recommend it all the time because you'll tell a bit of a story, you make it clear and understandable, and then you say, you want to read more? And speaking of people who need to read more, you have been in a kind of a public controversy with a public official. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, I can. I was on a panel with Callie Means, who's Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s chief food advisor in the Health and Human Services. And we were on a panel at Aspen in which he hit the decks running and started out attacking me and made the most landish accusations. What was so amazing about them was that they were so easily refutable.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what to do. I was kind of stunned. And then he apparently gave a speech at the Great American State Fair on the Mall in which he repeated these accusations. They're just completely laughable. For example, he said that I took money from the sugar and tobacco industry.
What?
I can't even say it without laughing.
Yeah, it is laughable.
I've sort of made a public career out of not taking money from industries that sell bad products, or any other industry for that matter. And he also said things that were where they didn't make any sense in terms of the, when things happened or what my level of responsibility was. He said I was responsible for the 1992 Department of Agriculture pyramid. No, I was not. Nothing to do with it. So I don't know. I mean, he's just somebody who makes stuff up, and constant fact checker.
I mean, he needs more than a constant. I mean, when you think about it, on his resume going forward, chief food advisor to RFK Jr. is not a plus.
Well, I don't know. I'm not giving him very good advice as far as I can tell.
I mean, it's kind of amazing. So collectively, we could suggest to this fellow to read a book and maybe pick up a newspaper once in a while. And as you say, get a full-time fact checker. But generally speaking, you don't even have to deal with these kinds of situations because so many people know your work for so many years that you're a trusted source. So I have to ask you about lard smoothies and raw milk.
What was the first one?
Lard smoothies. Tallow smoothies.
I missed that. I didn't know. All I knew about was beef tallow potato chips, which I'm actually looking for because I want to taste them.
Well,
I bet they're delicious.
They are. Yeah, no. In the olden days, McDonald's French fries were fried in something that had a little bit of beef tallow added to it, and it was absolutely delicious. But, I mean, we're joking about these high-protein animal derivative smoothies. And, again, the other thing about raw milk, we just have to ask because, again, when raw milk is made into cheese and aged properly and also handled properly, it can result in some wonderful cheeses. But when consumed directly from the cow, what about that?
Well, it depends on the cow and luck. I mean, the people who like raw milk and drink raw milk and will do anything to get it believe that it has special health properties. I'm not aware of any real evidence that the health properties are better because pasteurization doesn't kill much in milk. But people really care about it. They like the way it tastes. They like its natural quality. And if they're buying it from farmers who are producing the milk from one cow, the probability of that milk being unsafe is small.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But, oh my goodness, if you get sick,
Yeah.
From raw milk that's not safe, it's terrible. And particularly for kids, if there's E. coli or bad salmonella in that raw milk, then the kids can get really, really, really sick. Some can die. I mean, it's bad. And so that's a risk that you have to decide whether you're willing to take. Me, I prefer my milk pasteurized, but that's just me. If you're going to drink raw milk, you're taking a chance. It's not a huge chance, but oh, if something goes wrong, it's really bad.
Yeah, I mean, and we've had a lot of problems. We have less than a minute, but baby formula.
Oh, dear.
Right?
Yes, baby formula. I want a food regulatory system that's much, much, much better than the one we have.
Well,
the real problem is we just don't have agencies that are minding the store appropriately, because Congress, in its infinite wisdom, long before Trump came in, have done everything they can do to weaken the FDA. And now, with the Trump administration, has done the coup de grace.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll just have a few more minutes with Dr. Marian Nestle right back here at the table. We are back at the table. I'm Clark Wolf with Dr. Marian Nestle. We're talking about so many things that had to do with our food system and our food safety. And her new book coming out this fall with Lisa Sutherland, called Sugar Coated, Unboxing the Hidden Forces Shaping America's Favorite Breakfast Food. Marian, when does it come out? And will you be visiting us here in Northern California?
It comes out September 8th, and yes, I will be visiting Northern California in October. I'm doing three events in the Bay Area. I'm doing Omnivore Books in San Francisco on the 13th. I'm doing Book Passage in Corte Madera on the 17th, and I'm doing Grace Cathedral's Forum on the 18th in the morning.
Oh, that's wonderful. And maybe we can get you up here to Sonoma County to do some more. Tell us what you're hoping this new book will bring to the American public and the body of knowledge that we're being inundated with on a daily basis, and hopefully this will help clarify some of it.
Well, I'm always interested in making sure that people understand how food marketing works.
Yeah.
And that cereal companies are doing everything that they can to sell cereal. And I should say that this is a book from University of California Press, which was incredibly generous about giving us 44 full-page, full-color illustrations.
Wow.
So the book is gorgeous. I just got my first copy. I'm so excited about it. It's really beautiful.
Well, and one of the things that we should mention is that the Marian Nestle Food Studies Collection at New York University's Bopes Library, the Fales Rare Books and Collections, has something like 12,000 food pamphlets that show the history of these ancillary or collateral materials designed to help you buy more of various food products, some of which were things like flour and sugar and butter and all the rest of it, and some of which were absolutely ridiculous. I love the fact that early this week you had... or the middle of the week, you had something on your blog about annals of food marketing, weird, wonderful, and profitable. And the first one is salmon from spirulina.
Whatever.
And, but you focus on these things. You tell a little story about what people are spending a lot of time and money on that actually it's hard to believe anyone would want.
Well, everybody's trying to sell food. It's a business. A couple of $1 trillion a year in the United States alone.
Yeah, and you have said on more than one occasion, we have about double the calories we need, so we're just trying to make people fat and sell things to other countries that we're fighting with on a regular basis. All right, well, listen, keep doing what you're doing. We look forward to the publication of this book and to seeing you and to talking with you more soon. Right back here at the table. You don't know what you got till it's gone. You leave paradise and put up a fucking lie. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away your DDT.
parking lot.